had started changing recently, and he was acutely aware of how it broke high and low when he wasn't paying strict attention.
Nothing. You worried about tomorrow? Me?
Trigg snorted.
Come on.
It's okay if you are. Kale seemed to consider this and then uttered a bemused grunt.
You'd be crazy not to be.
You're not scared,
Trigg said.
Dad would never have.
I'll go alone.
No.
The words snapped from his throat with almost painful angularity.
We need to stick together. That's what Dad said.
You're only 13,
Kale said.
Maybe you're not, you know.
14 next month.
Trigg felt another flare of emotion at the mention of his age.
Old enough.
You sure?
Positive.
Well, sleep on it. See if you feel different in the morning.
Kale's enunciation was already beginning to go muddled as he slumped back down on his bunk, leaving Trigg sitting up with his eyes still riveted to the long, dark concourse outside the cell. Gen Pop. That had become their no longer new home. Sleep on it, he thought. And in that exact moment, miraculously, as if by power of suggestion, sleep actually began to seem like a possibility. Trigg lay back and let the heaviness of his own fatigue cover him like a blanket, superseding anxiety and fear. He tried to focus on the sound of Kale's breathing, deep and reassuring, in and out, in and out. Then, somewhere in the depths of the levels, an inhuman voice wailed. Trigg sat up, caught his breath, and felt a chill tighten the skin of his shoulders, arms, and back, crawling over his flesh millimeter by millimeter, bristling the small hairs on the back of his neck. Over in his bunk, the already sleeping Kale rolled over and grumbled something incoherent. There was another scream, weaker this time. Trigg told himself it was just one of the other convicts. Just another nightmare rolling off the all-night assembly line of the Nightmare Factory. But it hadn't sounded like a nightmare. It sounded like a convict, whatever life form it was under attack. Or going crazy. He sat perfectly still, squeezed his eyes tight, and waited for the pounding of his heart to slow down. Just please slow down. But it didn't. He thought of the thing in the cafeteria, the disappeared inmate whose name he'd never know, watching him with its red, staring eye. How many other eyes were on him that he never saw?
Sleep on it.
But he already knew there would be no more sleeping here tonight.
Chapter 2. Meat Nest.
In Trigg's old life, back on Cimarosa, breakfast had been the best meal of the day. Besides being an expert trafficker in contraband, a veteran fringe dweller who cut countless deals with thieves, spies, and counterfeiters, Von Longo had always been one of the galaxy's greatest unrecognized breakfast chefs.
Eat a good meal early, Longo always told his boys. You never know if it's going to be your last.
Here on the Purge, however, breakfast was rarely edible, and sometimes actually seemed to shiver in the steady vibrations as though still alive on the plate. This morning, Trigg found himself gazing down at the pasty mass of colorless goo spooned into shaved gristle, the whole thing plastered together in sticky wads like some kind of meat nest assembled by carnivorous flying insects. He was still nudging the stuff listlessly around his tray when Kale finally raised his eyebrows and peered at him.
You sleep at all last night?
Kale asked.
A little.
You're not eating.
What, you mean this?
Trigg poked at the contents of the tray again and shuddered.
I'm not hungry,
he said, and watched Kale shovel the last bite of his own breakfast into his mouth with disturbing gusto.
You think the food will be any better when we get to the detention moon?
Little brother, I think we'll be lucky if we don't end up on the menu.
Trigg gave him a bleak look.
Don't give him any ideas.
Hey, lighten up.
Kale wiped his mouth on his sleeve and grinned.
Little guy like you, they'll probably just use you for an appetizer.
Trigg put his fork down again with a snort, to show that he got the joke. Although he couldn't have articulated it, his big brother's easygoing bravado, so obviously